Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and here's a New York paradox. It's one of the most economically unequal cities in America, right? One in five people lives in poverty here, while according to a 2016 statistic, 35% of all income went to the top 1% of people. But the city also has a robust safety net for its poorest citizens compared to most of the country. And a new article from Crane's New York Business suggests that these two sides of New York City are not coincidence, that it's precisely New York's inequality that funds its safety net. The article is based on research done at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY that looked into state and local policies in New York, Washington, Texas, and Georgia, and what effect those policies had on inequality in those in the major cities in those states. To talk about the findings, I'm joined by the authors of the Crane's article, Greg David, who is also director of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the CUNY J School, as well as a Crane's columnist, and Kara Eisenpress, contributing writer for Crane's. Kara, Greg, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
So, Greg, what does it mean that New York's welfare programs are made possible by the city's inequality?
Well, let's just start with some numbers. So the top 1% alone pay 40% of all the income taxes in the city. That's $20 billion. And they pay almost half of all the income tax in the state. And they pay almost half of the income taxes in the city. So that's another $6 billion. So, and that we're just talking income taxes here. So it is New York's willingness to tax those very rich people that funds this enormous safety net. We're convinced that the New York safety net is the strongest in the entire country.
And Kara, you distinguish between a safety net and anti-poverty efforts. Would you make that distinction?
Right. So the idea is that the safety net makes sure that people in the bottom income percentiles avoid the worst possible outcomes, eviction, not having enough to eat, not being able to get medical care. Whereas economic opportunity is what lifts them and hopefully their children into better jobs and into the middle class. And so there is definitely overlap where, let's say, by keeping somebody in their home, they can then invest in themselves and make sure that they can take care of themselves and their family, something that they can't do if they're in a shelter or they're worried about being able to pay the rent.
So New York might help those in need, but in your article, you basically say it doesn't do enough to fix the systemic issues that put people in that position in the first place. Greg, do you want to expand on that?
Yes. Well, there are two parts to this. We really do make sure that people are protected. And there's no better example than that than our Medicaid program. And on top of the Medicaid program, we've taken the Obamacare program to put in this program called Essentials. So we're taking the entire lower spectrum of the income level and making sure they have health care. And we've also improved the Medicaid program. But if you're going to get people out of poverty, you have to do other things. Now, we do talk a lot in the story about one thing that is working, and that is the increase in the minimum wage. The increase in the minimum wage is really paying off in the city, so far without the consequences people talk about, and is raising wages, especially at the lower end of the scale. But if the city and state want to do more, they have to find new programs. And Kara looked into this program at CUNY that's really important in that regard.
Kara, go ahead.
It's called the CUNY ASAP program. It stands for Accelerated Study and Associates Program. And it's about 10 years old. It costs only about $2.5 million a year. And what it does is it now helps a quarter of the matriculating students at CUNY community colleges stay in school. It does this by helping them financially, so it will fill in gaps between their financial aid that they get and the tuition that they have to pay. It also pays for textbooks, and it pays for Metro cards, and sort of it's this accumulation of small things that helps keep people coming to school even when they have a lot of other responsibilities. And it started with just 1,000 low-income community college students, and it's ramped up really dramatically in the last 10 years because of its success rate. An outside study showed that the economic return on it for taxpayers is about $3.50 for every dollar spent in reducing the need for social services down the road and also an increased tax revenue. And for the students themselves, there's about a $12 return on investment for every dollar they spend going to school. And so it's the kind of thing where the Office of Economic Opportunity was able to look at a pilot, evaluate the data, and then ramp up quickly for honestly not that much money in the general scheme of things. And it's the type of thing that the office is trying to do more of, but we didn't find that much evidence of other anti-poverty programs that really were working.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Kara Eisenpress and Greg David from Cranes, who have a deep dive new article in conjunction with research done at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY, where Greg also teaches, that compare the local policies in New York, Washington, Texas, and Georgia, and the relationship between income inequality and safety net programs. And listeners, we can take your questions or comments or stories at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Greg, I want to go over some of the comparisons with the other states that you look at as you conclude that New York has the most robust safety net in the country and some of the biggest income inequality. But before we look at other at some of these comparative data across states, people are probably wondering, are you trying to make a certain moral point here that we should feel okay about income inequality because with so many rich people here, it produces a lot of money for the most robust safety net?
Well, I don't want to make a moral point. How about if I make a factual point?
Okay.
It's a factual point. We maintain this robust safety net because the rich here are so rich, and we will tax them. Now, the three things work together. So if you look at Washington State, here's a pretty wealthy state, especially with the great tech boom they've had there. But they don't have an income tax. So the rich in Washington State pay 3% of their income in state and local taxes. They pay 11%. They pay much more than that in New York. Let's see, I lost the figure for a moment. 11.3%. So it's a very important point. I don't want to say it's moral. I do. There's somebody I talk to about inequality a lot who tells me, you know, inequality in New York is different than inequality elsewhere. And I've been thinking about that point for a couple years, and I don't want to say I'm not sure it's different, but what I know is we use that inequality for a very specific purpose, and that is to make the lives of the poor better in New York than they are in Washington, and especially in Georgia and Texas. I want to tell you that I knew Georgia and Texas were different, but the research for this study showed how they're out, you know, fundamentally they're out to punish the poor to benefit the rich. I mean, that's just what it comes down to.
And Kara, the article refers to Atlanta as the capital of income inequality, right?
Right, exactly. And though it can seem to people like they can have the same opportunities as they have in New York while paying less for housing and other amenities. In fact, we didn't really find that that was the case. And then if you do fall on hard times, there's not much of a safety net. So Georgia takes some federal benefits, but they don't invest any state money in expanding those. So once you've gotten 4 years of TANF from the federal government, that's it in Georgia. Whereas New York starts chipping in for, it has 5 years of federal help and then 2 more years of state safety net assistance, and then there's housing programs, and there's emergency food assistance in addition to SNAP. And so it's certainly a little bit patchy, the safety net in New York, but the city and state do, you know, they do put in the effort to knit something together.
And here are some of those stats, Greg, that you were getting at a moment ago from your piece. The top 1% of earners in New York pay state and local taxes amounting to 11% of their income. The top 1% only pay 3% of their income in taxes in Washington state, and the same in Texas. Neither state has an income tax. And so those are important numbers.
It goes to show what a great difference state and local policies make, which is one of the things we really wanted to bring home in this series. And there's stories in Texas and Georgia and Washington that have been published on this too. Because we think of inequality and we think of taxes and in a separate way. We think of inequality as sort of like a federal thing. We think of the safety net as like, oh, federal programs like SNAP, et cetera. We think of taxes in the regard of federal. But I have come to believe that it's state and local policies that make all the difference about how this plays out in people's lives.
Thomas in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Your guest mentioned that upper earners pay 40% of all taxes, and I would just like him to comment on how much of the actual money in the city or state that those upper earners hold.
Well, the top 1% account for 35% of all the income in the city. The top 1% pay 40% of all the state income taxes and 43% of all the city income taxes. Now, there's a group called the ITEP, Institute for Tax Economic Policy, that does the best study, comparative study of taxes. Under that study, New York has the sixth most progressive taxes. New York State has the sixth most progressive tax system in the country. So there are a few places which are slightly more progressive than we are, but sixth isn't so bad all in all. And I would note that two of the states that are more progressive than us, California and New Jersey, also have these enormous pension liabilities that we don't have. So despite the fact those two states have a more progressive tax system, they're going to have a very hard time maintaining their safety nets because at some point they're going to have to pay those big pension bills that are coming.
Esteban in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Esteban.
Hi, how are you? This is Esteban. Thank you for taking my call. My question about this is, if in fact it's true that we're residing and relying on the wealthy covering that gap, are we moving more towards the Seattle model where you just mentioned 3% by doing things like this Amazon deal in Long Island City where we are giving tax breaks for the wealthy to come here?
Well, we're giving a company tax breaks to come here. We're not giving individuals a tax break to come here. As a matter of fact,
Esteban, what?
A company is made up of individuals.
No, but the individuals aren't getting any tax breaks. Yeah. The individuals are going to pay those taxes.
It's the corporate taxes, per se, that they're going to get a chunk off the top of, right? But all these $150,000 average salary workers are still going to pay their personal income taxes.
They are.
And so your article, which I know, Carrie, let me get you in on this. Your article, which has been in the works for a while, happens to come out after all this research, just as the Amazon deal was announced. And, and there's all this pushback about corporate welfare and bringing Amazon here in general, favoring the wealthy. I know Greg, the last time he was on, got kind of exasperated with some callers who were making that argument. He was saying, no, don't you understand? They're going to pay so much more in taxes than the tax breaks they're going to get, plus the individual taxes paid by their workers, that it's going to be a net plus for, if not inequality. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Greg. But Kara, did you add Amazon to this story because of that relatively breaking news?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing to realize about companies coming with big opportunities is that it's a chance for the city and its academic institutions especially to sort of make good on this promise of building a workforce of people who are from the city who can qualify to get some good jobs. And that's exactly what we mean when we say economic opportunity. And so if you think about inequality writ large, you have big problems that when you concentrate wealth, you get this troubling economic inequality and, you know, less economic mobility. And if you think about Amazon as a big corporation, you certainly can make that argument that it might be exacerbating inequality. When you think about bringing a whole lot of good jobs to New York City and potentially really making them accessible to people in New York, you can't really argue that that's a great opportunity for New Yorkers who can get those jobs.
Beth in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I hope you can hear me. I'm interested in seeing a historical comparison about what the 1% paid, I think he said 11.3% in taxes, and then comparing that to 20 years ago and 40%. What did that 1% pay?
The studies don't go back that far. The 11% has been kind of constant. What we do know, what we have tracked very closely, is inequality in the city. So inequality at 35% of the income for being the top 1% is actually not the highest it's ever been. The highest figure we ever had was about 38% in 2007. As far as I know from the ITEP studies, the 11.3% and New York's position as a progressive state has been approximately the same. There's also one other thing we should keep in mind. There's a longstanding study of the total tax burden of state and local taxes on a per capita basis from the Tax Foundation. New York has been the state with the highest per capita state and local tax burden for more than a decade, and it has always, in my memory, been in the top three.
Thanks, Beth. Kara, go ahead.
Oh, and so as the rich people in New York and especially in Manhattan are so rich, the average annual income of the top 1% in New York is $2 million, and in Manhattan it's closer to $8 million. So even when you see incomes going up in the bottom, so the median family income has gone up 4.5% from 2016 to 2017. It's now at $68,000. But when you're comparing rich to poor, I mean, $68,000 to $8 million or $2 million, you know, you still have intense inequality. And so that's why you don't always see the needle moving in terms of that.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we have a few more minutes with Greg David and Kara Eisenpress from Cranes. Greg, also the director of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the Craig Newmark School of Journalism at CUNY, and the school and Craig's did all this research on the relationship between inequality in New York and the safety net in New York. And Ed on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ed.
Yes, Brian. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. We had a mayor a long time ago who actually spoke positively about people whose income you're talking about. It was Mayor Bloomberg. A lot of people found it offensive. Now, you know, for this report to have any impact in an important way, I'd like you to anticipate what would be the reaction to this report by Mayor de Blasio and most of the political leaders in the city council.
That's a great question. What are the political implications of your findings, Greg?
Well, I think the political implications are actually very important, because now that the state legislature is completely in the hands of Democrats, and it's become much more progressive, especially on the state Senate side, we can expect a push in Albany to improve the safety net. They're definitely going to try to strengthen the rent regulation laws, which, by the way, are a part of the safety net, whether you think they're good or not. And they're going to try to raise the millionaire's tax further. And, of course, this is really important, because one of the points we make at the end of the story is that it's become much more expensive for the rich to live in New York because of the federal tax bill. They save enormous amounts of money now by moving to a place like Florida or Texas, or even Washington State, since it has no income tax. And at what point will they leave? I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that if any significant numbers of them leave, the cost in revenue to the state and city is just enormous. I'm not telling you they're going to leave. Mm-hmm. I'm not telling you there's any evidence they're leaving. There's just people who tell me, I know blah, blah, blah has left.
Right.
But it is an important issue as we consider to improve the safety net and raise the taxes that support it.
And when Governor Cuomo was on the show yesterday, his main message was that he's got two top priorities for the incoming Democratic House, and that is to try to repeal that part of the income tax law so that all these state and local taxes that wealthy New Yorkers pay go back to being federally tax deductible. The other part was to get the Gateway Tunnel approved. But the So there's that. But Carol, let me ask you to follow up on what Greg just said, because even without the federal tax reform, the premise of the article is that the wealthy in New York pay much higher taxes than people in places like Washington State and Texas, and therefore we have this more robust safety net. And to date, we still have all these rich people flocking to New York and staying in New York, despite, you know, some politicians always warning, if you have high taxes, people are going to leave. So could that be a takeaway of the story, that high taxes don't scare away wealthy individuals as much as some politicians argue they do?
Right. I mean, at the moment, New York has an argument for being the most interesting big city in the country, in the world. I mean, people really want to be here. There's a lot going on, and that goes for companies and it goes for individuals. And so there's something of sometimes a loud agreement and sometimes kind of a tacit agreement that to live here, you are going to have to pay the taxes that allow the government to tackle these really, really big problems with the budget that they need, and to educate 3- and 4-year-olds for free. I mean, that costs money to make sure that the shelter population hopefully begins to decline and at least doesn't rise, and that people are housed and fed. That costs money. And so I think a lot of people don't realize it in their daily lives. But when you pay your taxes, I mean, that's the agreement that you're making with New York City. I get to live in this place. I'm going to pay a lot of money to do that. And so far, it's an agreement people are willing to make.
And we will have to leave it there. Greg David, Director of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY, and Crane's New York Business columnist, and Kara Eisenpress, contributing writer for Crane's New York Business. They are co-authors of the Crane's article, The State of Inequality, New York's Safety Net is Made Possible by the Very Inequality It Targets. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Brian.